Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Travel's great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com or call 877-290-1880. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal? A pile of Monopoly money from the banker. Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, weirdos. My name is Ash, and I'm sitting here with somebody that you might know. I am freaking out a little bit. I feel a little bit starstruck. I feel a little bit of butterflies in the tum-tum area because I'm sitting here and she's just really hating this. But I'm sitting here with a published mother bleeping author. I don't know if we can swear on this version.
We totally can.
I'm sitting here with a motherfucking published author, Elena Urquhart.
Hey.
She wrote a goddamn book, tinyurl.com/thebutcher. In the red.
Thank you.
Or you can officially get it in stores today.
It's true. It's pub day.
It's pub day. It's pub day.
The baby is out in the world.
I'm so proud of you. Congrats.
Spreading its wings. Thank you so much.
How do you feel?
It's wild.
Yep.
Because I was working on this book before we even started the podcast.
Yeah.
Like years before we started the podcast.
Absolutely.
So it's really wild that it's just come to fruition the way it has. And it's wild, like, you guys fucking rock, because the fact that you were even giving it a chance and the way that you've supported it and supported me, you're fucking amazing. I cannot thank you enough. I am so beyond grateful for each and every one of you. I can't describe it.
No, you people truly, you blow our socks off, and you're blowing Alina's socks off especially.
Truly. And, you know, today is rainy, and it's gloomy, and it's foggy. It's my ideal weather. If it wasn't so humid and, like, warm, it would be perfect.
Maybe the rain will break a bit of the humidity.
Yeah, maybe the temperature will drop and it will officially be, like, exactly what I ordered.
My gosh, imagine.
For this day.
That would be great because I just want the rain to stop a little bit. I'll take the gloom for you because my outfit that I ordered for pub day that matches the book.
I'm obsessed with you.
Is not going to work well in the rain.
I'm literally obsessed with you.
I love you so much.
That's amazing.
All right. Well, I figured that, well, I didn't figure, but, like, I'm sitting here acting like I made this up. But I thought I could ask you, like, a couple questions just for pub day, for, like, the listeners and the new readers and everything, to kind of hear a little bit more about the process and, like, the inspiration and all that. So can I ask you some questions?
And this is, like, a little bonus episode. Just, you know, this is ad-free. This is just kind of like an extra this week.
Just
because we were excited and we figured we would give you guys a little sneak peek of the first few pages of a chapter, like the audio version. So we'll plop that in here in a little bit.
Ooh.
And that way, if you haven't bought it and you're on the fence, and maybe it'll intrigue you, maybe not, but I hope it does. And we just figured it would be a fun little bonus thing to do.
Yeah. And you led me, that was like a great segue, because I was going to ask you, speaking of, like, they get to hear a little bit of a chapter. I know that you write a little bit out of order, so I know that you did not start with the first chapter.
No.
That's right?
No.
Do you remember what chapter you did start with?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the chapter number, but it's a chapter that is kind of like one of the big crescendos of the book, and it's like the big gnarly thing that I don't want to give away, but it's basically like almost in the middle.
Okay.
Somewhere it's like pretty in the, and then I kind of
I blossom out from there. Whatever. The way I do it, I don't know if anybody else who writes does this, but I just slam my knee into the table. But maybe writers do that too. I don't know. But I basically, I think of a scene that I really want. And then I'm like, well, I just have to write that. So I write it and then I just kind of make everything work around that.
Okay.
And then other scenes will pop in. And even if they're completely out of order, I just figure out a way to connect them somehow.
You know, it's so funny. You taught me that. And that's actually how I do morbid episodes.
Really?
Yeah. Because so you've funny. Told me that for so long. Yeah. So I'll start morbid episodes like that.
That's so funny.
When you were writing the book, though, did you feel like there was a certain chapter that was the hardest one to write for any reason? Or did it all kind of flow?
I think they all kind of flowed. Like, it felt really good once it started going. There was a couple where it's kind of it can be tough when you go into like little periods of I heard like an Aaron Sorkin interview, and he was saying, like, somebody asked him, like, do you ever go through writer's block? Mm-hmm. And when I was listening, I was like, please tell me you do. And he was like, oh no, like, my default mode is writer's block. Like, I'm living for the time when I'm not out of writer's block.
Do you feel that
like,
way?
I was like, I feel that so hard. Like, you feel like your default mode is writer's block, and that you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to write. And then when you break it, it just like explodes.
Yeah.
Like it's like a dam unleashing. It's just like a levee came open and everything flowed out. And so there's a couple that were like setup chapters that you kind of have to put some information in there. And those could be a little tough if you're not in the right mindset to write that kind of thing. But again, once you start, I feel like you just get so excited by your own characters and your own world that you... At least I just, like, kept going.
Yeah.
We had to shave a lot of writing out of it, actually.
Really?
Which, like, maybe we'll be able to share some of the extra stuff that we kind of, like, chopped a little bit. Because we just, everybody who listens to this podcast, brevity is not my strong suit. I say it all the time.
She said it from day one.
And I was writing like an epic fantasy novel at this point. So we were like, we need to calm down and bring this into, like, a more digestible length.
I love that. It's so funny to hear that, like, you actually did experience writer's block, because all I know of you is to be writing. So I'm like, I feel like there's never a time where you're blocked. Like, I'm always seeing you just furiously typing.
And I think that's part of it, too, is, like, even if you're blocked, just write something.
Even if it's dumb. Garbage.
Even if you look at it later and you're like, what the hell was that? At least it's, like, it gets some of it out, I think. It kind of, like, unblocks a little bit of it.
Right. And obviously, like, we know this is your first novel. Did you take, like, writing classes, or did you take any kind of course or anything like that? Or did you just teach yourself how to do this?
I took a lot of, like, English courses and creative writing courses in college just because I liked them. They weren't my major by any stretch, but I liked them. And I always just wanted to write because I was a big reader my whole life. Like, my parents were big about books and reading. Yeah. Like, and I've passed it on to my kids now, is like, when it was one of those things, my mom was like, you're not going to get a toy every time you go to the store. You know how kids always want, like, you go to Target, they want a toy.
Of course.
But my mom was always like, no, you can't, that's not happening. But you can always have a book.
Yep.
Wherever we go. If I was like, can I have this book? She was like, yep. It was always, yep, you can have that book.
I remember when we would go to BJ's with her when we were little, and she would literally, like, set us off in the
book section.
When we were little, you've always, like, been, like, way older than, not way older than me, but older.
Yeah.
But she would, like, drop us in the little book section. She'd be like, all right, I'm going to go shopping, find your books.
Yeah, like, pick out your books and we'll meet.
Always let us get however many we wanted.
So that's always been, like, books have just been such a huge part of my life, and I always wanted to write one, but it always just seemed like a very daunting task to me.
Yeah.
To sit down and write a novel, and it is. But once you start doing it, if you love your idea and you feel, like, confident in your idea, then you'll do it.
So where did the idea for The Butcher and the Wren come from?
Just my own, and actually this was like, it started from like a little nugget from a dream that I had, or a nightmare. And it was that somebody was chasing me and I couldn't see him. Ugh. And there was music blasting and we were outside, which was weird. And I felt like it was like swampy and gross. And like, I didn't know what was happening and I didn't know where I was running. And it was this open, like, swampy bayou type atmosphere. And I, like, shot out of bed from it. And it was one of those dreams where your heart's racing and you're like, adrenaline is pumping and you're like, oh,
you can,
and
you still feel like you're in it.
Yeah. And it kind of makes you feel like sick when you wake up because you're so shot out of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And sometimes I'll write down like little snippets of dreams just because I think it's like interesting to look at later. But, and I've said this before to someone, I was like, usually I look at the notes and they're like, nonsense, like they make no sense.
I've seen them before.
Yeah, it's just like purple chair roof and like, you're like, I don't know what that is.
Tell Jim. You're yeah, like who's Jim?
Tell Jim, I don't know what that is. And but this one, I was so awake that when I wrote down a little snippet of it, it was very coherent. And when I read it the next day, I was like, I wonder who that guy was. And then I was like, who would that guy be? And then I just started thinking about it, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna write like just a little page down and see if it's like sounds scary. And I just wrote it down and I started like fleshing him out a little bit. And then I started like really enjoying writing him.
And this is Jeremy.
Yeah. And I really wanted to know more about him. So I started coming up with like backstories for him and what would be like, would he be clean? Would he be dirty? Like, would he be like, you know, Otis Driftwood from House of a Thousand Corpses? Or is he like a Hannibal Lecter? Like,
more the
where
latter.
Is he? I would say he's definitely more the latter. And but like, it just took off from there. That scene, and that ended up being the first scene that I ended up
got writing. It.
That's where it all came from.
So you said Hannibal Lecter for sure. Is there anybody else that inspired Jeremy's character?
Probably. I'd say like that he's a good mashup of a lot of like horror movie characters that I love. Like, he's definitely a Hannibal. He's definitely got bits and pieces of like American Psycho.
I could see that
in there.
Or any, like, cases that we've covered, like, that haunted you? Did any people like that, like, seep into your writing ever?
I'm sure that the idea of, like him using sound, which scares him, to scare other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was, like, something that maybe crept into my head from cases that we've covered that just scare me so much that I was like, I feel like this needs to get out of my head. But I mainly went off of, like, horror things that I love, just because it's like, it's fiction, it's can be a little more like, woo, you know what I mean? Like,
yes, very two very different.
Yeah, exactly. Like two very different brands of scary, I would say.
Definitely.
But he's definitely an amalgamation of like all my favorite horror villains.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so then who is Ren? Who is Ren inspired by?
Ren is like who I want to be. Like, Ren is like everything.
I feel like Ren is who you are.
I appreciate that.
I do.
I put like little pieces of me into Ren, but she definitely has like traits that I like strive for as well. So I think she's just kind of like the goalpost.
Okay.
For me, she's like a goalpost character of like, that's the goal. Right,
and the
there.
Book is told from Ren's point of view and Jeremy's point of view. We have dueling points of views.
Yeah, and it goes back and forth. So you'll get, sometimes you're going to get a scene from Ren's point of view and you'll get the same scene from Jeremy. So you get two very different ways of looking at a scene, which I that was fun to write.
I feel like I know these people. Like, I feel like I'm talking about people that like live over there.
I know, because we've talked about it so much and I've been like, well, I think I'm going to have Jeremy do this. And like, I've talked about them like they're real people. So it really, they become real people.
They do. And I feel like you put so much of your knowledge from being an autopsy technician into the book. Like, that's very clear. Was there other research that you had to do outside of just what you knew already?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of, I did a lot of crime scene protocol research.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, that's always different and it can be different in different counties and different states. There's like, you know, I looked up like the hunting laws for wild hogs in Louisiana.
I don't think I've gotten to that part yet.
Yeah. So it's just like there's little things like that where it was like I had to look up like research into these like very weird like hunting things or something I don't know a lot about. So I did a ton of reading and research on that and like asked a few people I know that hunt.
Okay.
For, you know, for like as a hobby. So it was, I just wanted to know more about it. And like, you know, I talked to people who like grew up doing that with like their dad or their mom or like their brothers or sisters or something. And they kind of told me how that goes in a family dynamic. And that helped me to write this for sure.
I love that.
Yeah.
Kind of like really transitioning out of that here, out of like the whole writing process. And then when you found out that this book was actually going to be published, what was your first thought?
that I've still, it is pub day today.
Pub day.
And I'm sitting here and the book is sitting next to me. Multiple and I'm still books. Like, what? Like, I'm still like, is that real? Like, can I touch that? Like, we're going to go into like a store later just to look at it because I just want to see it in a store. Like, it's just such a wild, I think any writer and any author will agree that it is a very tough process, like mentally, emotionally,
oh yeah,
physically sometimes. And it's like you get a lot of radio silence for a long time with no updates or sometimes not great updates, and you're just like, you feel like you're getting beat down a little bit,
right?
But that when you get the yes, it's like nothing I've ever experienced. It's amazing
because it must just feel like you're putting your diary into the world.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Right?
Especially with fiction, because it's like, this is just what I made up. Like, yeah. This is my, you know, like, this is, it's me writing down this, like, fantasy story. Mm-hmm. And then being like, okay, everybody, you can read this. It's like, usually you write these things down. I would write things like this down and then just never show anybody. Because I was like, well, that's just my story.
Yeah.
It's like very vulnerable to just give it out there like that, but
yeah,
everybody's been so fucking amazing about it.
I know,
you've made me feel amazing.
Everybody has been really great.
Yeah, you really have.
I know you've had like such a good experience so far, and that makes me so happy.
Oh yeah,
I'm watching everybody. But I have a question for not only myself but the people. I feel like this is a burning question for the people, especially people, because I know some people out there have already finished the book.
Mm.
And they're probably dying to know, have we seen the last of Ren and Jeremy? Are we going to see this duo again?
This duo.
I wouldn't necessarily say they're a dynamic duo.
No.
But.
So I'm not going to give anything away, but there is more of the story.
Okay.
For sure. I'm not saying that you're going to see both of them.
Got it.
Again, but I'm not saying you won't.
Okay.
I'm just saying the story will, we want to continue the story for sure.
Spoken like a true author. She's like, I don't know. You might get it. You might not.
Well, I've already started continuing the story. So it's still going, but I won't let you know who is involved.
I already know because I got to read a little bit. Ha ha. But for those of you who haven't heard any of this book yet, we are going to include a little snippet at the end here of, I think, is it the first chapter? Portion of the first chapter, and it's coming right up. So keep listening, keep buying copies of the book.
Woo!
And what do you want them to keep doing?
Keep being awesome and be kind to each other and support each other and high five each other.
Yeah, and if you think that you have an idea to write a book, fucking do it.
And write a fucking book if you want to. Do it. You can do it. I promise you. Even if it takes years and years, you'll get it done.
Hell yeah.
Do it.
Now it's time to make that hotline bling.
You'll get that reference in a second.
Jeremy hears the screaming through the vents, hears it, but doesn't react. His nighttime routine is essential. The mundane, everyday tasks that he engages in make him more himself. The simple act of wrenching on the ancient faucet on his tidy bathroom vanity grounds and centers him. His night usually ends standing in front of this mirror. He is freshly showered, and normally he follows it with a close, leisurely shave. He likes to crawl into bed with a clean body and mind. He takes the time to ensure these preparations happen nightly, regardless of any outside disruption. Tonight, a particularly loud screech pulls him from his routine. He stares into the mirror, feeling rage entangle itself into his senses. He can feel it rising like an invasive rot. He can't think with the almost rhythmic screaming now rising from the basement. For as long as he can remember, he has hated loud noises. As a child, he would feel his surroundings close in on him like a vice whenever he was amid the sounds of a crowded place. Now, the only noises he craves are those of the bayou. Its symphony of creatures soothes him like a warm blanket. Nature always makes the best soundtrack. He tries to block out the screaming, This routine is sacred. He sighs, pushing a piece of blonde hair that has fallen lightly against his forehead back into place and flicking on the radio next to the sink. The only other time he can find solace in sound is when he listens to music. As he prepares for relief, Hotline Bling by Drake blares through the speakers, and he flicks it off immediately. Sometimes he feels like he was born in the wrong generation. He slowly washes away the blood and grime from his hands, trying not to concern himself with the muffled, agonized moans that loudly escape through the heating vents. He looks hard at his face in the mirror. Each year, he feels as though his cheekbones have risen slightly and become more prominent. It is an oddly satisfying consequence that aging has thrust upon him, and he feels blessed for it. A lot of well-adjusted people admire a well-sculpted skull. Most of them don't even understand how primitively ominous that particular fixation is. Most people don't allow themselves to see the savage side of a psyche that was crafted millions of years ago out of their ancestors' often brutal need to survive. These are the traits that evolution deemed to be useful. People are just too dumb to understand that their own predilections are suggestive of a gene pool that is rooted in brutality. He doesn't necessarily look like someone entangled in depravity. He appears innocuous, and at times could look downright wholesome. That's why it all works. There is a plant called Amorphophallus titanum that is colloquially referred to as the corpse flower. It's large, beautiful, and without any outward mechanism that would suggest it is dangerous. Yet, when it blooms, every 10 years or so, it releases an odor that resembles rotting flesh. It survives, though. It thrives. He is not so different from the corpse flower. People flock to this curious plant, and it has cultivated a base of admiration despite its quirks. Tomorrow is Thursday. Thursdays are his Friday, but he truly hates when people say things like that. Regardless, he has enjoyed the luxury of taking Fridays off work since he started his second year at Tulane University's School of Medicine. Even though he has some classes to slog through, Fridays are the beginning of his weekend. His weekends are when he gets the most work done. He is particularly excited because he has real plans for his current house guests this upcoming weekend. Of course, executing those plans to their full potential relies on his ability to add one more to their group. Emily would indeed be joining them. It had been weeks of analysis after first initiating their partnership in biology lab, and he is now sure that she would bring the challenge he is craving. Emily jogs a few times a week and doesn't seem to fill her body with trash, so she likely has stamina. She lives with two roommates in Ponchatoula, where they rent a large old home together off campus. Aside from her willingness to reveal too much about herself to her new lab partner, she is competent, self-reliant, and intelligent, all of which would serve her well during his game.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hey, Morbid, this is Weirdos.
Since Elena betrayed me and didn't go through with our brilliant plan for opening episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, we thought that we'd get it right with this go-round, as we tell you about one of our favorite deep dives that you might have missed within our feed.
In August 1963, Patricia Tolles returned home from work to find her apartment demolished. Shaken, she contacted one of her roommate's fathers, who stumbled across a truly grisly murder scene.
The media created a narrative that would, to their benefit, sell newspapers.
Every headline set out to make single women feel afraid and deter them from pursuing personal independence, instead of focusing on how people are depraved and that we should stop assholes from being assholes. You can find this episode by following Morbid and scrolling back a little bit to episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, or by searching Morbid Career Girls wherever you listen to podcasts.